And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. I'm Gary Machida, and you have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. It's great to be with you today. Boy, you know, it's always fun to do apologetics. I love this program because it gives me a chance to just review information, sharpen skills, you know, kind of blow the dust off things that you've heard or, you know, that I've learned over the years. It's just good to kind of get in the dojo, get a good workout, and therefore be able to go out there and explain, defend, share the faith with whoever we might meet. So it's good to be with you. And we got a great show in store for you today. We're going to continue our series with Anthony Digman. He's going to come into the dojo. And if you recall, Anthony has a really cool apologetics program that he has for Catholic high school, and where he dives into some of the most difficult issues that face Catholics and teens today. And so I invited him to come on the show for a few segments and kind of work through some of the material he gives in these lessons. And today he's going to come on. He's going to talk about evidence for the existence of God. So what I thought was cool was because since he's doing this program in the Catholic high school, I know a lot of our listeners are teachers. Maybe you're into catechetics, instructing the faith, RCIA, that type of thing. And you would maybe like to kind of duplicate some of Anthony's work. I thought it'd be great to have him on, kind of, you know, put us through our paces. And that way you have something that you could use to duplicate in your own parishes. So he's going to come on the other side of the break. And that should be a lot of fun. A great, great guy. And we're also going to do our critical thinking skills. And since it's Friday, we're going to do a propaganda technique. I didn't choose this for a while just because it's one of those propaganda techniques that I think everybody's familiar with. But for the sake of completion, folks, that's how we do it here in the dojo. We're going to cover it anyway. It's called the unreliable testimony. And I know all of you have witnessed this, have seen it. But, you know, let's identify it, you know, put in our collection of propaganda techniques, unreliable testimony. And also we're going to meet an early church father today. And this particular early church father is a fragment. You know, as we go through the early church fathers, we realize not all of them are persons. Some are just writings that we're not really sure who they're from. Nevertheless, they're very early Christian writings that appear to be well accepted within the early church. And today's early church father happens to be the Muratorian fragment. So if you're into apologetics, you've heard about this fragment. So we'll talk a little bit about what we know about it and its contents. So it's an important piece of evidence. And it's time for my shout outs for those watching on social media, live on YouTube and Facebook. Hello, everybody. Great to see familiar names. Thank you, Elizabeth, for the emoji explosion. Yeah, kind of a religious theme to that explosion. Hey, Jose, Beth, everybody over there. Thank you for the emojis. Thank you for listening as well, by the way, for those listening live on radio and via podcast. By the way, you're probably asking yourself, podcast? I can listen to this through a podcast? Yes, you can. Just get the Virgin Most Powerful phone app or go on the web at virginmostpowerfulradio.org. And not only can you listen to podcast versions of all the great programs that Virgin Most Powerful produces, but also even this program. So we're humbled to be part of all the great stuff that they do there. So check it out, virginmostpowerfulradio.org. You can get lots of great stuff. All right, so you, if you have a question for Anthony, or you know, maybe you think about... maybe I should start a program in my parish. You can ask him about it. Give us a call at 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. Or you can always email your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And I try to answer every email that comes into Dojo Mailbox. And yes, I know I've been plugging the full mailbox for a while. We really need to work it in somehow. So I don't know. Maybe next week, maybe I can try to squeeze a question or two in the first segments. I don't know. Because there's just so much great stuff on store for you. In fact, at the end of the program, I'm going to let you know who's going to be on next week. Got an awesome lineup as always. But before we do that, let's do our critical thinking skills. And today's finding the fallacy is a propaganda technique known as the unreliable testimony. Propaganda is basically a way to persuade people to think to or buy something that's not, doesn't require arguments or evidence. It's more of a social manipulation, if you will. So the unreliable testimony is basically when companies will enlist celebrities to sell products as part of their public relations efforts. So, you know, many times these celebrities never even heard of the product. They know nothing about whatever they're talking about. But nevertheless, you know, they get a little money and they get a little face time on television. And so they plug it. Now, as you know, testimonials are incredibly powerful, especially in sales. I mean, there's whole TV networks that were started by selling products through personal testimonials. Well, the unreliable testimonial is basically a shill, somebody who's given money to promote a product that people think, wow, you know, so-and-so says this product is good. It must be good. When in fact, they might not even have used the product before. This particular propaganda technique, as you can tell, is used mostly in sales. I mean, you generally don't find that. I can't even think of an instance where you would find that within religious dialogue, but you never know. I mean, just because I can't think of an example, maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody from the YouTube dojo section, maybe you could think of an example, but I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure it's out there. Perhaps you could even, I don't know, you could maybe have someone who is a megachurch preacher that looks good on camera, but really has no theology behind them, that they basically follow a script, maybe? I don't know. Now I'll have to think about that one, folks. All right, so without further ado, why don't we jump to the Meet the Early Church Father segment. And the Meet the Early Church Father segment, we are going to talk about the Muratorian Fragment. Muratorian Fragment. Now, Muratori is not the person who wrote the fragment. It's actually the name of the person who discovered the fragment. L.A. Muratori discovered this fragment, published it in 1740. So it's been around for a little while. Who wrote this fragment has been a source of tremendous controversy within the scholarly community. Lots of people have been put forward as the possible author of this fragment, such as Caius of Rome, Josephus, Clement of Alexandria, Melita of Sardis, Polycrates of Ephesus. But generally, the greater possibility, although it's not certain, folks, is that it could be that of Hippolytus of Rome. So we're not really sure who wrote this fragment. And we're even less sure about the date, you know, because there's a wide variety of writing. Some place it pretty late in the early church. Some place it very early. And, of course, we go by the Jurgen's Faith of the Early Fathers for these segments. And Jurgen's opinion is that this anonymous fragment was certainly dated later than the Shepherd of Hermas, since he mentions it. And Shepherd of Hermas' most probable date is 200 A.D. So he puts the dating somewhere between 155 and 200 A.D. But, you know, you can't really nail down the exact time, because after all, it's just a fragment. There's not a lot you can go on. What's interesting too about this fragment is that it opens with an incomplete sentence, and it's almost impossible in Latin to translate, you know, to complete incomplete sentence. So the text kind of just jumps right into its subject without much of a clue as to the preceding context, although very most likely is talking about the Gospels. In fact, if you read the moratorium fragment, and it's not too long. In fact, I was actually tempted to read it all on air, but I thought the background information might be a little bit more more important. You'll find out that he's basically talking about the books of the New Testament. So he begins by talking about the Gospel of Luke. So apparently he finished some discussion about Matthew. It says the Gospel of Luke was written by the well-known physician who was a companion of Paul. I'm just summarizing. And then he moves on to John. John was one of his disciples. He talks a little bit about John. He believes that John got his source, most of his source material from the Apostle Andrew, interesting enough, according to this fragment. And that basically he recorded all the information based on the recollections of the disciples and so on. Let's see. But the real fascinating thing for me comes near the end of the fragment. He goes on, by the way, to discuss the Acts of the Apostles, the Pauline letters, just one sentence description, if that, of each of Paul's letters. And then he says this. Let me read it, because I think this is the most fascinating. There is also circulated one to the Laodiceans and another to the Alexandrians, forged under the name of Paul in regards to the heresy of Marcion. So he says there are forged ones. He also says that there is the Epistle of Jude, and indeed two ascribed to John that are received by the Catholic Church. And he also says both of wisdom written by the friends of Solomon in his honor and the Apocalypse of John and Peter's were received. So, interesting enough, he also includes in the New Testament the book of Wisdom, which is the Old Testament book, and Peter.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Apologetics and high school kids, you know, do they mix? Well, actually, they mix very well. And our guest is someone who's at the forefront of apologetics instruction at high school level, you know, youth, teenage apologetics, and specifically, we're going to dive into a subject about the evidence for the existence of God and how to how he does explain this very difficult idea to young Catholics around the world. So anyway, our guest is Anthony Digman. He's a husband and father of a young family. He's also a Catholic speaker, author, and educator. He's internationally seen on Catholic television, radio, EWTN, Radio Maria. He's also the author of several books, which is Using the Force, Star Wars and Catholicism, Demonology, Exorcism, and Holiness, and also Sign of Contradiction, Contraceptive, Family Planning, and Catholicism. He has a master's degree and has served the church professionally in Catholic schools, parish ministry, and on the councils at the Archdiocese of Dubuque since 2006. And you can check out lots of great information about him, articles and such, from www.anthonydigman.com. Anthony, welcome to Hands On Apologetics.
Great to be with you, Gary. Thank you.
Yeah, boy, Anthony, you are on the forefront. And that's one of the things that really attracts me to your ministry is, you know, you're there rubbing elbows with young kids, young adults, sharing the faith. Maybe if you could just give a couple minutes for those who haven't listened to any of your past visits to the dojo. Tell us a little bit about your ministry and how you got involved in the ministry.
Absolutely. So about 11 years ago, I left doing religious education work for a parish in Dubuque, Iowa, pretty close to my hometown, and ended up going to Beckman Catholic High School in Dyersville, Iowa, which is the home of the Field of Dreams. So if you've seen that movie from the 80s, you've got a really good handle of what our rural part of Iowa looks like. And I've been there 11 years now. And over the course of that time, there's always been, at least for a couple decades, there's been an apologetics course for seniors spring semester before they leave and head off to college and encounter various other worldviews and things of that nature. But I found in my first couple years that the course material that we had been teaching was basically just Catholic apologetics. So it was common questions that Catholics would be asked by Protestant brothers and sisters, friends, you know, that kind of stuff. So what students challenged me on my first and second year was, you know, I see what you're trying to do here, sharing Catholicism, et cetera, but to be quite honest with you, I don't know if I even believe in God. I don't know if I'm even a Christian. So right now, talking about the details of Catholicism just really isn't helping me. It's not really working for me. So these students were really fantastic. You know, I think almost any teacher can recognize that, especially at the high school level, students who are honest with you are able to sharpen you like a good sword, you know, or an arrow, and make you go back to the drawing board and refigure what you need to do to address their needs and questions. So I went back to the drawing board and did some more digging. Of course, I shared, I think, the first time I was on with you last month, just kind of my background and how I was 18 years old and finally discovered Catholicism for the first time, even though I was a cradle Catholic. And basically the faith journey that I went through trying to discover the truth, which religion is true, which denomination within Christianity would be, you know, all that kind of stuff. So my students challenged me on this and said, you know, what evidence do we have for God? What evidence do we have for Christianity? And then basically I had to build the foundations for them of evidence before we could move on to the idea of looking at Catholicism specifically.
Yeah, very good. And yeah, there's been a huge change within Catholic apologetics where, you know, when I first started back in the early 90s, it was Protestant fundamentalism was the big thing. You know, Catholics were leaving the church by these Protestant fundamentalists. But within, I'd say, the last 5 or 6 years or so, maybe a little bit more, all of a sudden, you know, you have this kind of vehement atheism and skepticism that has sunk down even to the high school level. Yeah, I totally hear where you're coming from.
Absolutely. And even in that vein, I find in moral theology class, which we cover with the seniors in the fall, needing to talk about relativism right off the bat is very, very important. Otherwise, it's difficult to talk about anything in terms of morality. But that goes right back to what you were saying, Gary, about the secularism and all of those ideas that are really challenging right now.
Yeah. So that's a difficulty because When you get down to those kind of like, I call it low-level apologetics because it's very mm-hmm. basic questions. Does God exist? Can mm-hmm. we trust the senses? That's where you get into philosophy, and usually that's a big difficulty with younger people. You know, they don't have mm-hmm. that philosophical background. Did mm-hmm. you encounter that when you first started, you know, diving into theistic apologetics?
Absolutely, yeah. But what I enjoy with the youth anyway is they're open. You know, they haven't explored much philosophy. And at the point when they're 18 years old, you know, some of them even 19, and getting at the end of senior year, they're ready. You know, they can definitely handle this stuff. They're almost college freshmen. So they tend to get pretty excited about it. And then that gives me the opportunity not only to look at our Catholic faith from a purely theological level, it gives us more of an opportunity to bring in the deep thinkers and philosophical ideas that make our tradition even more rich and get to expand that and make it broader for them, which they, you know, just don't get a taste for that when you're doing elementary school and junior high and even early high school. You know, you get parts of it, of course, but when they're old enough to really handle it by the end of senior year, we really can start to dig into some of those topics, and I find that incredibly rewarding. So basically, I built kind of a three-part program that I walk my seniors through. So I broke the semester down into evidence for God, why we believe in God, and that gets prefigured by a discussion on science and religion, because that's a pretty important topic to hammer out. And again, like you said, low-level apologetics, but getting that basic foundation in place so that you can then build on the discussion of evidence for God. And the last time I was on with you a couple weeks ago, we talked about that science and religion component. Then I take my students into evidence for God's existence, which we use some scientific evidence, we use some philosophical evidence and arguments, and get to play around with that a little bit, which I'm looking forward to talking about more as we get through our show today. After that, we move on to the broader topic of why be a Christian. Okay, what's unique about Christianity? And that hinges all on the person of Jesus Christ and the resurrection especially. But before we can do that, my students, you know, keep holding me back, and they're like, well, wait a second. You're telling me all this stuff about Jesus, but how do we know what we know about Jesus? Are our sources really reliable? So we've got to spend some time talking about the reliability of the New Testament and what it's telling us about Jesus, like historical reliability. Do we have archaeological support? Historical support for what we believe about this person and what the New Testament tells us. So that becomes its own component, its own unit. Then we can talk about Jesus and Christianity. And after that, finally, we get to move into more specifically Catholic apologetics. So that's kind of the breakdown that I've put together. And I've the last couple years here now, I've turned that into a three-part parish mission. The first one looks at why God, the second part looks at why Christian, and then the third part, why Catholic. So all of that stuff gets wrapped in, of course, much abbreviated from a semester working with seniors, but sure. Basically I try to hit the highlights over that and offer that. My website, should it be of interest to anyone, is anthonydigman.com, and that will break down the Why God, Why Christian, Why Catholic, three talks that I do either. Three nights is pretty common. I also offer it as a workshop and as a retreat opportunity that you could do on a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, you know, lots of opportunities there as well.
Yeah, because Catholics, we generally know what we believe, but when push comes to shove as to why we believe what we believe, I think most Catholics, unless you're into apologetics, you know, those are huge blank spots that the culture can use to exploit and undermine your faith.
Absolutely. And what I share with our students is never be afraid of questions, because the church is, A, so true, but also so deep and so rich. And there have been so many amazing thinkers over the last two millennia that we can jump into and stand on their shoulders and get to see everything that they taught and why, and help build the theology and philosophy that the church is rooted in and built upon. And it's just wonderful. So I tell my students, don't be afraid of anybody throwing stones at the castle of the Catholic Church. Okay? Mm-hmm. Dig in deeper. Find out, you know, what's their question? What's even the motivation for their question? How can you help them with that? Maybe they had a life experience, or they had a parent who had a life experience and that has come against the Catholic Church and that's coloring their point of view. But never be afraid of these questions. Dig in deep, find an answer. And that's part of the reason and the way that I fell in love with the Catholic Church and then Christ. I would say I probably fell in love with the Catholic Church even before Jesus. But yeah, that's my experience. Digging in deeper and finding answers, and it just lit me up.
Yeah, yeah, same here. And when you do find those answers are incredible. I mean, so deep and true and life-changing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
No, I was going to say, we have a couple more minutes before the break. Where do you start? I mean, do you treat it like there's a fresh plate and you start building, or do you take objections? How do you begin this?
Yeah, so I usually, starting off the semester anyway, I say to them, okay, guys and gals, you know, since kindergarten and you had Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so teaching class, you've been taught all the way through God exists, God loves you, Jesus loves you, he died on the cross, take away your sins, rose again from the dead, et cetera, et cetera. But have you guys ever really looked into, or has anybody really given you some real evidence, concrete evidence, scientific arguments, philosophical arguments, you know, archaeological evidence for why we believe what we believe as Catholics, you know, and just kind of get the blank stares from them. And I ask them, do you want this? Are you interested? Would you like to explore this? And they're like, well, sure. Well, not everybody, of course.
But, yeah, right,
you know, sure.
Right.
So that really helps me get them started, really whetting their appetite, asking the question, hopefully showing a way that it applies to their life. It's like, have you asked these questions? Is this important to you? And then I get buy-in from them at the beginning of the semester. Right away, they're like, well, yeah. You know, let's look at that. Of course, they know it's coming. I mean, I have all the sophomores in our high school and all the seniors. It's a, you know, very modestly sized rural Catholic high school. So I get to know them as sophomores. They know what's coming. We talk about what's coming up senior year. So it's not a surprise or a shock to them at all, but that tends to be the way that I introduce them to the topic and the idea. And that tends to get them going pretty well.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Yeah. Because one thing I love about teaching, seniors or high level high school is you can push them a little bit, but the cool thing is they'll push back. So you do get responses, you know, they're not afraid to argue.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really enjoy that too, because then you can actually go deeper and get to the meat. You know, when students are not comfortable enough challenging and going deeper and asking questions, it makes it really difficult to know where they're really at. And then you really can't help them. You can't address their deeper questions unless they're willing to ask, which is just fantastic when they get to that point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so it's kind of funny. Parents often, they're afraid to challenge their older kids about the faith, but actually that's the best time. That's when you get a reaction in a good
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right. We're
sometimes.
I'm sorry. We're coming up on break. We're talking with Anthony Digman about evidence for the existence of God. We'll start diving into that after the break. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. Stay tuned, folks. More to come.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. We'll be right back.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Master Apologist Anthony Digman about explaining the existence of God to seniors in high school level people. And right before the break, Anthony was sharing about how he begins by kind of whetting, you know, the students' appetite for the discussion about the existence of God. And Anthony, you know, the next step, I think, for me, I know I would make a huge misstep. Okay, let's put it that way. I would say, okay, everybody, open up your books of Aristotle. Let's look at Intro to Logic and things like that. And then everybody would get bored and no one would want to be there. So how do you, what do you do next after they're like, yeah, why do we believe God exists? What's the evidence for him? Where do you go?
Definitely. Well, I like to ask questions, maybe more than, challenge them, you know, what do they already know, kind of point of view, Socratic method approach.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'll ask them is, you know, can we prove God's existence? And just let them soak in that. Can you prove that God exists? And they generally come to the consensus, well, no, we can't prove it, otherwise everybody would know, or not everybody has enough information to know. But in today's day and age, you know, the information is out there. It's just a matter of, are you willing to look at it, consider it, dig in deep, that kind of stuff. So I actually bring a quote from Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, who, of course, becomes Pope Benedict XVI later on. And he said, any attempt to reduce God to the scope of our own comprehension leads to the absurd. So basically what Cardinal Ratzinger was saying is any God that we can fully understand is not God, because God is infinitely beyond us in every way, shape, or form. You know, like what we in our culture and music and language are to an ant, for example. But I mean, infinitely more so between us and God, of course. So we really have to get comfortable with the idea of mystery. And of course, the answer to 100% proving God's existence is that no, we can't 100% prove it. So there definitely is that faith component that is, of course, a part of religion. But I challenge my students that it does not need to be a blind faith, that God has given us great evidence for his existence, both in nature, in our own lives, experiences, and then I, of course, dig into the sciences, and we can use reason with philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. So we really dig into that 100% true. Now, the reason why I dig into that 100% true, can you believe in God 100%? Can you know 100% without perhaps having a relationship with God or a personal experience with God? Because a lot of people that I run into anyway have not had much of a personal experience, you know, and once you have that, then you're done. You know, you don't need an explanation. You've had it, right? But for somebody who has not had that personal experience, you know, how do you address this? I had a student probably my third or fourth year into teaching who said, you know what, I'm the kind of person who bases my life and my beliefs on what I know 100% to be true. So if you can't show me that God is 100% real for sure, then, you know what, I just can't believe in God. You know, I'm just going to be not an atheist, but I'm just going to have to be an agnostic. You know, I'm just not convinced that we can know, and I'm going to have to sit on that fence and really not commit either way. So I sat on that. I didn't know what to say. A couple of years into teaching, and you know, I'm like, gosh, this kid's being so honest and so vulnerable. And, you know, I appreciate that, you know, and I gave him, you know, a quick response back and said, you know, thanks for your thoughts, and I'll think about it. You know, so I'm mowing the lawn, and it dawns on me, you know what? What do we really know? What can we 100% prove to be true? And I was reminded of the famous quote from René Descartes, the French philosopher and mathematician, who said, I think, therefore I am. So, yeah, I mean, and there's so much, it goes so much deeper than that, of course, but at least from the outset, Descartes was saying the fact that I am thinking means that I must exist. because we cannot 100% prove, for example, like, you know, you're listening to the radio right now, or your computer, or I'm speaking into my, you know, headpiece right now. Is this headpiece even here? You know, is Gary Machuda really out there? Right? You know, what I'm listening to right now, does it even exist? But even more concretely, the chair I'm sitting on, is it really there? Am I really in this room? Are the people I see around me actually there? Because it all could be a great big dream. It could all be an illusion, something going on in our heads. You know, if you've seen the movies The Matrix with Keanu Reeves or Leonardo DiCaprio's Inception, those challenge that philosophical idea deeply. You know, what do you know 100%? So I start going after him this way, right, challenging the philosophical ideas. Like, what do you really know, guys and gals? What do you know 100%? And you basically come to the conclusion, well, you know, if Descartes is right, I think, therefore I am. So I know 100% for sure that I exist, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it becomes more and more challenging. You have to start building on what you know from assumptions, which is not 100% proof. So I came back to the student after mowing my lawn the next Monday after the weekend and said, I challenged him on this. And I remember giving him the example of, you know, do you think that God's calling you to marriage? Will you be married someday? And he said, yeah, probably. And I said, is it important to you to marry a woman who loves you? Oh, yes, of course. And I said, how are you going to be 100% sure that she loves you? Well, she treats me well, she tells me she loves me, et cetera, et cetera. But then I push him harder, right? How do you know 100% sure? Will you ever be 100% sure? And of course not. And he got the idea. And then I opened it up to the rest of the class who's listening in. You guys and gals, what can we be 100% sure of? I mean, last Friday, this student had said, I base my life on whatever's 100% for sure, real, that I can absolutely prove. But the reality is you can't even prove that the chair that you're sitting on is really there, or that you're really in this room. You can't give 100% evidence for that. So then, oh my, you know.
Yeah, now that you destroyed reality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then that provides us an opportunity to go, look, reality for us is what we think based on various assumptions. So let's throw out this idea that you have to 100% prove God because you don't even know 100% that you're eating tacos for lunch. Okay, so and then we go on from there, which I find as an interesting spot to come from. But, you know, again, this doesn't go against Catholic teaching. Some students get nervous like, well, you know, the church teaches that there absolutely is God. Well, yes, it does. But Joseph Ratzinger, again, Pope Benedict, before he was the Holy Father, said basically believers and unbelievers are in exactly the same boat because they can't be 100% sure. The believer has this constant threat of unbelief, this threat of atheism out there that, you know what, I do believe in God, but what if I'm wrong? But on the other hand, the atheist has the exact same temptation and problem, the possibility that, you know what if I'm wrong? What if there really is a God? And neither one of them gets 100% proof. Right? So exploring that is, I think, definitely useful to start to lay the foundation. And then I walk them into four separate topics, which are my favorites. There are certainly many different evidence for God's existence. But then I launch them into four, first cause, intelligent desire, miracles, and then Pascal's wager, Blaise Pascal's wager. Okay. And we talk about those. So if I may, I'll start with first cause.
Yeah, let's do that. We got about 2.5 minutes. At least we can get started on it.
Good. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me start with miracles, if we've got about 2.5 minutes. So miracles is great. I mean, even, you know, 6-year-olds, 9-year-olds will say, oh, miracles are evidence for God. You know, and it's a great place to start with evidence. But if you're speaking to a skeptic, I very highly recommend finding a miracle and knowing a good miracle that has great evidence behind it. One that, for the church, for example, when we canonize saints and when we beatify blessed, the church requires a miracle in that case to become a blessed or to become a saint. So the church has heavily investigated a number over time. So I definitely recommend checking out miracles that the church has officially approved. For example, one of my favorites to share is Saint Mother Teresa. When she was beatified as Blessed Mother Teresa, there was a woman named Monica Besra. She was a native Indian woman, and she had a terminal, painful abdominal tumor. And the doctors gave up on her. There was nothing more that they could do. But the Sisters of Charity, Mother Teresa's order, prayed over her. They cared for her. And she was in so much pain that Monica couldn't even sleep. Okay? On the anniversary of Mother Teresa's death, the one-year anniversary, the sisters took a miraculous medal that had been touched to Mother Teresa's body, and they touched it to Monica Besra's stomach, and they prayed over her. And Monica Bezerra was actually able to fall asleep after that experience. When she woke up, she had no pain, and the tumor was gone, completely gone. So the church requires for their miracles to recognize them that it's instantaneous. You have to have a change quickly. It has to be complete, and it has to last. It can't be just for a week or 2 weeks. So those are the basic three requirements. And again, I highly recommend exploring miracles that the church has approved, because the church really digs in deep and makes sure that there really is good evidence for these. And that's a great piece, I think, because there's no natural medical explanation for these situations, and seems to point the direction toward God.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. So miracles. I think you kind of tapped into something that a lot of apologists ignore. You're right. I mean, even for the church has already done the investigation for these canonizations, right? So all you have to do is just look at that evidence, and the church has done their homework for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And why not? You know, why reinvent the wheel? I
mean, yeah. Do you use Eucharistic miracles?
Absolutely. I love to use Eucharistic miracles as well. One of my favorites on that one, the Vatican has an archive of these. There's a traveling Eucharistic miracle exhibit, but there's also a website.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's realpresence.org has those listed for free. And one of my favorites is a Eucharistic miracle in Buenos Aires when Pope Francis was Cardinal Bergoglio. It happened in, there were events in 92, 94, and 96, but Eucharist turned into flesh. It was tested by a forensic lab. They found it to be human tissue, heart tissue, actually. It's just phenomenal, the results that came out of that forensic study of what was going on. The person that the tissue was taken from had suffered extreme pain, possibly torture, perhaps beating, flogging to the chest even, because there was it was so inundated with white blood cells that they were trying to repair and deal with the issues going on in that heart tissue. It was just really fantastic Eucharistic miracle. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that one. You're right. The depth of research and the things that uncovered, and I believe it was a blind test, wasn't it, that the people So they didn't even know what they were examining.
Exactly. Yeah. When they told the forensic lab where they had gotten the tissue, and it was double blind, so whoever brought it into the lab wasn't aware of where it came from either. And when they revealed this to him, the doctor basically said, "I have no medical explanation for that whatsoever, no scientific explanation, but I stand by my analysis."
Man, so very that was just good.
Fantastic.
Very good. Well, we're chatting with Master Apologist Anthony Digman on Evidence for the Existence of God, explaining it to high school seniors, young adults. We got a lot more to go to on the other side of the break. So stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Hands on Apologetics. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with Anthony Digman. By the way, check out his stuff at anthonydigman.com. And we're going through some of the how he approaches a very difficult topic of the existence of God with a very difficult age group, you know, seniors of the high school. And Anthony, I love that approach of miracles because, man, it draws people in. Everybody loves to hear miracle stories. And it also, you know, firms up your faith and points to the existence of God as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, you're right. Everybody loves stories. That's probably why Jesus was so great with that, taught us how to do great catechetics, because he told stories. You know, he wasn't quoting the catechism to us. He'd throw in a Bible verse from the Old Testament occasionally, but, you know, he told stories. So definitely, I'm a big fan of that. So miracles is a great one that I like to get going with. Another one that I like to toss out that is not really an argument for God's existence, but rather explains reasons why it's valuable to be a believer is Pascal's wager. So Blaise Pascal pitched this. He lived during an era in Europe of extreme skepticism, atheism. So I find this incredibly useful today. So if you run into somebody who's just radically skeptical about the idea of God or believing in God and how that could even be valuable, for example, I like to use Pascal's wager. So it kind of breaks down to four quick components. Okay, so consider an atheist for a moment. Okay, an atheist, and we're not talking like a gentle atheist who might be borderline agnostic. We're talking about somebody who's ultra firm against God's existence, is not open to any information, is absolutely sure God doesn't exist, is not open to the idea of God. Okay, and then we'll take a theist, okay, which is a believer in God. So the theist, right? Not all theists are going to go to heaven, okay? Because we're not all applying it, you know, all that kind of stuff. So let's say that we have a theist who's applying their faith. They have a strong belief in God. They're living a life in conformity with that. They're growing in holiness and God's grace, et cetera. Okay, so we've got an atheist and a theist. Start with the atheist. Let's say that the atheist dies and God does not turn out to exist. There's no God, okay? Oh, they're jumping around. They're really excited. Yes, I was right. You know, I didn't have to spend all that time in church. I didn't have to give my money away to charity. I got to live whatever morality or lack of morality I wanted to live. Yay, I was right. No. If the atheist dies and there's no God and they're right, there's nothing. There's nothing. So they can't enjoy being right or anything, right? Well, think that the theist lives a good life, a holy life, grows in holiness, grows closer to God and their relationship with God. And it turns out God does not exist. That's scenario number two. Okay, it's not like they're going to be, oh, I was wrong, bummer, you know. No, there's nothing. There's no God. So basically, if the atheist lives the way they want and God turns out to exist, then, you know, there's no gain, no loss. And if the theist, you know, lives life as a theist, God turns out not to exist, there's no gain, no loss. Okay, here's where we get to the fun part. Let's say that the atheist dies and God does turn out to exist. Uh-oh. and potentially infinitely negative uh-oh. Okay, I mean, it could involve the eternal damnation of hell, right? So, I mean, it's a huge, huge possible problem. And if the theist dies and God does turn out to exist, again, assuming that they're living as a holy theist, because even Satan's a theist. Satan knows God exists, but that doesn't get us to heaven, just knowing God exists. So a theist who's growing in holiness, God does turn out to exist, then they have an infinite positive. They have heaven, eternal life, okay? So basically, I sum it up and pitch it this way to the students. If you live as an atheist, you have nothing to gain and everything to lose. And if you live as a theist, as a believer in God, a sincere believer in God, growing in holiness, growing in relationship with God, love of God, experiencing the sacraments, etc., then you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. So Pascal puts it down as a wager. It's a bet. You know, we all have to place our bet in life. where do you want to put your chips down? What are you going to bet? Why would you not bet on the nothing to lose and everything to gain category? So I think that's a great way to really rock the skeptic out of their, well, you know, I just don't believe in God. Well, wait a second, you know, maybe you ought to consider the question deeper. I mean, these ramifications are enormous. So I launch into Pascal's Wager, and then we get into a couple of what I enjoy is pretty deep topics that really bring in the science to the question of does God exist and some of that evidence. And I'll, of course, we only have a couple minutes, so I'll cover them pretty briefly. But the first one is first cause. And this one basically says everything that's happening is a result, an effect of a previous cause. Something caused this to happen. You know, I am here because my parents got together, you know, and you can trace back through history, cause, event. If you go back far enough, now this is where the science comes in. Scientists are telling us that based on the evidence we have, that our universe, meaning everything that exists, okay, we're not just talking about our Earth and the Sun, the solar system, okay, not just talking the galaxy, the Milky Way. We're talking the entire universe, everything that we know exists, began about almost 14 billion years ago in the Big Bang. And like we talked 2 weeks ago on your show, Gary, the Big Bang theory was actually proposed by a Catholic priest, a Belgian physicist, Father Georges Lamotte. So this is not opposed to Catholic teaching at all. So it's wonderful scientific development that actually, as we're going to use in First Cause, supports the idea of God's existence. So what they tell us with the Big Bang is that there was a singularity that had zero spatial volume, and the entire universe launched into existence from that. Okay? So bear with me on this. If you have a singularity with zero spatial volume, no space at all, how much matter can you fit into zero space? None. Okay? Right. None. So matter popped into existence at one point. Right? And space, the distance between material particles, popped into existence. There was no space. There was zero spatial volume, right, with this Big Bang event that took place, if you go back far enough. Also, as Einstein teaches us about space and time, he saw space and time as the same thing. They're not independent things, and he called it space-time. They actually have an effect on each other, how time works. Time has some level of relativity. It's not absolutely objective, depending upon where you are and how fast you're moving in the universe. So basically, here's how I sum it up. Everything has a cause-effect relationship, but you've got to ask, what is the first cause? What caused it all to get going? And when you go back to the Big Bang, scientists tell us that matter, space, and time came into existence. So here's the question. What do you know of that is able to bring matter, space, and time into existence? If it's bringing matter and space into existence, it can't be matter, it can't be in space, which means it has to be spirit to be able to bring matter and space into existence. And if it brings time into existence, then it has to be eternal.
Okay.
Yeah. And if it is able, if it has the power to do this, it has to have infinite or at least nearly infinite power to bring all of this into existence. So now your first cause, you got to be honest, the first cause does not argue that the Christian idea of God as God the Father and Jesus, that it argues all that. It doesn't. But what it does tell us is that you had to have a being, if you will, who was omnipotent, had infinite power, who was outside of time, so it's eternal, and it is a spirit. It's outside of matter. So infinite, all power, spirit.
Yeah.
What is God? Check. Okay. So first cause is a fun way to play with what we know from science and Big Bang and the universe and look at it philosophically and say, well, how do you answer that question? Right. The other one that gets a little deep that I love to talk about, I'll sum it up, is intelligent designer. And this one is, if you look at everything around us, our life and existence, do you think that it was all random? Did it all come together by chance, or was it designed? Is there an intelligent designer behind it? And to bring the scientific component into this, there's something that scientists talk about, anthropic coincidences. So there are various forces in physics that appear to have been fine-tuned, that any of these forces in physics, like the strength of gravity, the speed of light, the strong nuclear force, or the weak nuclear force that deal with atoms and how they hold together and react, all of these things could have been slightly stronger or slightly weaker, slightly faster or slightly slower. You know, they could arbitrarily be set, if you will. But for our universe to work, for life to exist, for human life certainly to exist in our universe, you had to have all of these constants. And the last I read, it was about 37 physical constants, these physical forces, were all fine-tuned perfectly. That if you took any of these 37 physical constants, and if you adjusted them slightly, made them a little faster, a little slower, a little stronger, or a little weaker, the entire universe would collapse, and life wouldn't exist as we know it. Right. But you can ask somebody more generally, just look at your own life. You know, look at things around you. Do you believe that it all came together by random chance? Because if there's no God, if there is no intelligent designer, then everything we look at has to be completely random. Right. And somebody I like to bring up on this subject is a guy named Anthony Flew. Anthony Flew was born in 1923, died in 2010, so 9 years ago. Anthony Flew attended Oxford. He was a staunch atheist. He argued against C.S. Lewis, who was his senior at that point, on the God question. And Anthony Flew went on for more than 50 years. He was internationally recognized as a leading expert on atheism. Okay. Oh, yeah. Anthony Flew went to an event in, I believe it was 2006, I think. He went to an event, I'm sorry, it was 2004, went to a debate, and he was supposed to argue against a theist, and he was going to do the atheistic position. The theist went first, and he followed up, and he basically said, yeah, I've changed my mind. And not just at that event. He had changed his mind over the course of several years. And in 2007, he published a book, There Is a God, How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. And basically the testimony that he gives in that is he was primarily convinced by the arguments of first cause and intelligent designer, that when you look at science, when you look at the physics, that there must be a God. And he concludes in his book, his thesis basically is the short answer for why he changed his mind after being a leading atheist for over 50 years was this, and I'm quoting from him here, this is the world picture that has emerged from modern science. That there must be the mind of God at work. There must be an intelligent design. It's the only way that you can explain what we've discovered in the sciences.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's a great book. Part of it's kind of a book report on all the stuff he did, but it really gets interesting because he was very honest. You know, he did really grapple with issues, and when people made good points, he conceded they were good points. He wasn't an ideologue.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point for all of us, even as, you know, as believers, is if we're going to engage in apologetics, whether it be Catholic discussion with a Protestant or whether it's a believer theist discussion with an atheist, we need to be open to their argument. We need to sincerely listen, hear what they're saying. If there are great points, we need to say, yeah, that sounds really good. Of course, dig deeper. Maybe there's a great counter argument to it that we didn't think of, right? But if we're going to ever expect somebody to consider our point of view and possibly even change their life based on the evidence we share, we have to do the same. We have to listen to them and be open.
Absolutely. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for coming on Hands-On Apologetics.
It was a pleasure, Gary. Thanks for having me back.
All right, Anthony Digman, everybody, check out www.anthonydigman.com. Lots of great stuff there. Man, it's already time to shut down the dojo here. Coming up next, Terry and Jesse Show. And by the way, coming up next week, I forgot to mention, we have Pat Flynn of the Pat Flynn Show. Sister Mary Ann talking about heaven with John DeRosa, Mark Maravelli, and Ken Hensley. Great stuff coming in store for us next week. And I wish everybody have a great day. And God willing, we'll speak again Monday. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.